ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading text 7 from Canto 5, Chapter 5. Very wonderful section in a very wonderful literature. Lord Rishabhdev's teachings.
Yada na pasyatyat tata guhe guneham. Svarte pramatak sahasa vipaschit. Gatasmritir vindati tatratapan. Asadya maitanyam agaram agya. Yadana pasyat yata. Guneham Svarte pramatak sahasa vipaschit Gatasmritir vindati tatratapan Asadya maitunyam agaram agya Yada, when, na, not, pashyati, sees, ayata, unnecessary, guna iham, endeavor to satisfy the senses, sva arte, in self-interest, pramatak, mad. Sahasa, very soon. Vipaschit, even one advanced in knowledge. Gata smritihi, being forgetful. Vindati, gets. Tatra, there. Tapan, material miseries. Asadya, getting, maitunyam, based on sexual intercourse, agaram, a home, agya, being foolish. Translation, even though one may be very learned and wise, he is mad if he does not understand that the endeavor for sense gratification is a useless waste of time. I hope everybody understands that. Being forgetful of his own interest, he tries to be happy in the material world, centering his interests around his home, which is based on sexual intercourse and which brings him all kinds of material miseries. In this way, one is no better than a foolish animal. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the lowest stage of devotional service, one is not an unalloyed devotee. Anyabhi lashita shunyam jnanakarmadhyanavritam. To be an unalloyed devotee, one must be free from all material desires and untouched by fruitive activity and speculative knowledge. On the lower platform, one may sometimes be interested in philosophical speculation with a tinge of devotion. However, at that stage, one is still interested in sense gratification and is contaminated by the modes of material nature. The influence of Maya is so strong that even a person advanced in knowledge actually forgets that he is Krishna's eternal servant. Therefore, he remains satisfied in his household or life, which is centered around sexual intercourse, conceding to a life of sex. He agrees to suffer all kinds of material miseries due to ignorance. One is bound by the chain of material laws. Yadana pashyat ayata guneham sarte pramatak sahasa vipashchit katasmatir vindati tatratapan asajya maitunyam agaram agya. Even though one may be very learned and wise, he is mad if he does not understand that the endeavor for sense gratification is a useless waste of time. Being forgetful of his own interest, he tries to be happy in the material world, centering his interests around his home, which is based on sexual intercourse and which brings him all kinds of material miseries. In this way, one is no better than a foolish animal. Any questions? Pretty clear, isn't it? In the verse, this word sva artha, second line down, is there. And that's one of the principal points of attention for a Vaishnava. What is one's self-interest? Sva means one's own, like sva-rup or sva-artha. Artha, in its common usage, it means money or economic development or material prosperity. But that's just the distorted, mundane application of the term. The real direct meaning of the term is that which is of value. So people have different values. And material sensibility says, I want to enjoy. And money equals the facility or means to enjoy, so I want money so that I can enjoy. So artha is commonly considered economic development. Dharma artha kama moksha. As I'm speaking, I'm recognizing that I'm jet lagging. So the mind isn't focusing properly. Please excuse me if I get lost somewhere along the way. You'll have to listen a little extra carefully this morning, I think, and probably next couple mornings. So, artha means like that. People engage in dharma, religiosity, for the sake of the pious credit that they earn, which in a very calculating way says, I'm going to get some points, some punya points. And with those punya points, I'll get prosperity in different ways. Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, and Shri. If not in this lifetime, in the next lifetime, I'll get nice birth, Janma, and Shri, maybe a little of that, a little more beauty in my next life, and during this life, opulence and the capacity to understand things. I'm going to get perks in this life and the next life. That's the calculation. In some cases, it's really gross. My wandering mind is now thinking of one man. Well, let's say the Kanishta Adhikari mentality. There was one man that was like a classic Kanishta Adhikari. Anyway, without the detail of Well, we would have class, like we're having class right now. And the man, every morning, would come right in the middle of the class, like we weren't even in the temple room. And he would like, he has a big body, so he would breathe very heavily, and he just like march, stomp his feet right through the middle of, right in the middle. And had these plastic bags of stuff that he rattled and then put on the altar, and then, you know, did this one, and then got his wallet out and put some money in the hundi box, and Om Jaya Jagadisha Hari, and then, you know, went to get his Charanamrita and then left the temple room. Like, we weren't even there. And, you know, we would sometimes try to tell, because he did this every year, every day for years. Could you imagine? And we would tell him, you know, please be, you know, quiet. This is Shravanam Kirtanam, and that is, you know, something else. So please be respectful. We were respectful. Please be respectful. And he says, I couldn't do it because we didn't exist. So we just had to tolerate it because he was, you know, a sincere Kanishtadhikari. He wanted the punya points from, you know, I give $1 and I get back $100. So that was, I'm sorry, but that was his mentality. And etc. Without expanding on the example, we have all seen this temple is not, and it's not this temple only, it's just the mentality. People do those things. I could tell some other stories, but I'll tell one other story. I visited the Puerto Rico temple sometime, like long ago. I did book distribution as a brahmachari at the Evanston temple. And at the end of that was the winter where the workers came out and, you know, punched devotees and floored them. You know, Pragosh was one of them that got, you know, blood all over the place. And the guy had, it was one of the workers, and he covered his head and ran. But we knew who he was, but we didn't do anything because we didn't want a war. Anyway, it was like the wild woolly west, you know, Chicago. Pew, pew. And at the end of that winter, it's a great morning class, huh? At the end of that winter, the Puerto Rico temple opened, and Gajahanta Prabhu and I were asked out of the airport party to go to Puerto Rico to, like, you know, ribbon cutting ceremony, to go there and start book distribution in Puerto Rico. And now I forget the story I was going to tell. My goodness. Yeah, Kanishta Adhikari. My goodness, I can't remember. I'm sorry. It was a good story, too. Illustrating Kanishta Adhikari mentality. Okay. So, persons who consider doing something meritorious gets them something beneficial. And, yes. So, because I had done that service long ago, I had made some acquaintances with some devotees in Puerto Rico, and I went back to visit. And when I went back to visit, the temple is in a new place from where I was. It was very near the university. Very strategic location, and students would come, and it was very nice. For some reason, they sold that property. Maybe there's some problem with the neighbors or something, and they got a place up on a mountain with some land and agriculture. And so I'm being driven from the airport to go to the temple. And we went around this circuitous route and around, and there was this church, and right next to the church, there was, like, you know, right next to the church, there was this skyscraper being built, right in the middle of, like, agricultural land. I said, what's that? He said, oh, that's this controversial reverend that all the other religious The Christian groups don't like him because his message is pray to God and prosper. You know, be a full-on Kanishadhikari, shameless Kanishadhikari. Go to God, ask him for stuff. And it works. And that was like, you know, he was one of these inspirational guys, and he had a big following because it worked. People got prosperous. So then he had a plan where the church would become even more prosperous. They built a skyscraper, and you can come to church every morning before you go to work and pray to God to become prosperous. And, you know, it costs a lot to get a spot in this skyscraper next to the church. And, you know, all the people, many of the churches, were really against this preacher. And not so much that he was saying the wrong thing, but they were losing their customers. Kanishadhikari, that was the example. Do something like, and you know, it's all over the world. Doesn't matter culture, language, you know, religion. Like I don't know what the translation is, but those of you from India, you know the translation of, as we have our RT song, particularly the Gujaratis, they have their RT song, and you know, it ends with Om Jaya Jagadisha Hare, and those of us that don't know the words think, well, that's very nice. But the whole program is, you know, I want this, and I want that, and I want the other thing, and the other thing, Om Jaya Jagadisha Hare, right? Right? Preeti? You know the song? Huh? Yes, you know the song. So some of our sannyasis have made a little parody. I think Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj has the funniest one. I want a refrigerator, a color TV, and a home by the sea, Om Jaya Jagadisha Hare. Something like that. Anyway, so that's Kanishadhikari mentality. Now back to the verse. Rishabhdev is instructing his sons, don't be like that. Noteworthy is the fact that amongst his 100 sons, 9 became very elevated, perfected Paramahansas. And then some others became qualified Brahmanas, and large balance became kings. So not everybody went the same direction. Not everybody became sannyasis. Many of them became grihasthas. But if you're going to become a grihastha, these instructions are not for those brahmacharis and sannyasis. These instructions are for grihasthas, varnaprasthas, and sannyasis. And everybody. Everybody. That the culture of not taking up activity for the purpose of sense gratification and religious activity or the performance of duties of life, presumably, at least in Vedic culture, duties in life are taken up under the authority and in pursuance of the Vedic directions. Of course, there's the unregulated. They just do anything. But the regulated, those that are under the codes of the Vedas, which we're aspiring for. So our lives should be, here's the guna iham. Ayata guna iham. So that's the last part of the first line. Should not be unnecessarily endeavoring to satisfy the senses. So there's what's necessary. This is, you know, one of Jai Jagannath's favorite topics of utilizing things as far as necessary, accepting things as far as necessary. Where's the line? Where's the more than necessary? And over here is necessary, and over there is not sufficient. It's less than what is necessary. So that takes a lot of introspection, it takes a lot of guidance, it takes a lot of principle-centered deliberations. And over a period of time, one who is following the Srimad Bhagavatam, that's the Nivritti Marg, the path of decreasing involvement in worldly things, the line moves. So one has to continue to recalibrate in the course of life and gauge, is the line moving this way? And even if, let's say, in the case of some devotee's life, for some period of time, something that they become spiritually weakened for whatever, so many different reasons, then the line may need to move the other direction, but, you know, not unrestrictedly, but so where it's that nice medium where not more than necessary, not less than necessary, like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one who is moderate in his habits of eating, sleeping, work, and recreation, not more than necessary, not less than necessary, something. And even so, then on that, even that is one exercise, what's necessary, what's unnecessary, because this verse is more than necessary. Ayata guna iham, unnecessarily endeavoring to satisfy the senses. Doing that is caused by losing sight of one's self-interest, or one's self-interest gets covered. What's your real interest? Too bad. Your real interest gets covered when you don't do that exercise. What's more than necessary? What's necessary? What's less than necessary? What's necessary? So when it's more than necessary, self-interest is covered. So one of the antidotes is not just like pull back the reins, but go one step more subtle and what's my real self-interest? Because that's what's going to keep the ship moving. That's going to keep your spiritual trajectory going in the right direction, is what's my real self-interest? What's my real self-interest? Not what my mind says and my senses say and vox populi says. What's my real self-interest? Like, who am I? And, you know, those kind of things. Real basic things. So devotees spend a fair amount of time in that realm of contemplation. We do active things, but we're also, the driving force behind it is this, what is my real self-interest? You know, the one of the classic verses that Prabhupada quoted so many times, Na te vidu svarta kitim hi Vishnu, durashaya, bahir, artamaninas. Those that don't know what the real self-interest is are very busy in the bahir arta maninas. Bahir means outside. Arta means what's of value. And maninas, they're contemplating what's out there in the sense gratification marketplace that's going to make me happy. Even in the realm of, you know, devotional service, or at least the beginning, earlier, prior stages of devotional service, just as Prabhupada is saying here, in the lowest stage of devotional service, one is not an unalloyed devotee. Okay, that's us. We're not unalloyed devotees. So there's this mix. You know, and part of our responsibility as newer devotees is to very carefully monitor the mix. Increase the one and not unnecessarily allow the other to get out of control, or in an artificial way try to not have that which is necessary, eating, sleeping, work, and recreation in our life, excessively. Here's an example of excessively curbing or restricting the senses. There was a period of time when in ISKCON in general, a few of the leaders started doing this, and then it started proliferating, that on Ekadasis, a number of us observed near Jalakadasi, every Ekadasi. And then it went into near Jalakadasi and staying up all night and discussing philosophical topics, or staying all night and having kirtan mixed with philosophical discussions. And it was, you know, it wasn't so much of the all night thing, it was more near Jalakadasi every Kadasi. So I remember one very sincere brahmachari imitated the activities of those that had the capacity to observe near Jalakadasi. And they found him passed out in the walk-in refrigerator at night. He couldn't control himself. So rather than be seen, he went into the refrigerator and started, it offered the whole refrigerator. I started eating. And he passed out in the refrigerator floor. So that's a little excessive restriction. His mind wasn't peaceful. So one should have an ongoing monitoring sense of what's one's capacity for sense control and those things that are necessary for being in a peaceful situation. But now we're in this mix, and we're looking at what's the right balance. And now those things that are in the category of sense gratification, it's not with a big, it is not that now we have a license to have sense gratification. It's dedicated to Krishna. A really beautiful classic example of this is our own original preceptor of our sampradaya, Lord Brahma. Very quickly, last five verses of Sri Brahma Samhita come after these beautiful Govindam prayers. And Lord Brahma has a desire that's a material desire. And it goes back and discusses that in the verses before the Govindam prayers. He got the desire to create in part because Hiranyagarbha Brahma invested him. He's ready to go. Go create. So we may also, and his is big, he wants to create a universe. We don't even think of how to create a universe. We want to do something. So it's whatever the scale is, a desire. That's a material desire. Now, he presents that to Krishna, Govinda, and says, I don't want to lose my Krishna consciousness because of this material desire. I got a material desire. What do I do? So that those verses detail what to do. It's not like detail, but detailed enough, especially Bhaktisiddhanta's purports, which are following Bhaktivinod Thakur's purports, which are following Jiva Goswami's purports. So we have like our sampradaya acharyas leading us in this exploration. There's this nice section where Bhaktisiddhanta writes about these three different categories of activities. And I can't remember them right now because I'm jet-lagged. But it's the body, the mind, and social. Something like that. And this thing gives a list of, here's some examples of the body, here's some examples of social, here's some examples of the mind. And we have these different things that we do, as long as we have a body. And you can say, oh, I want to be spiritual. I won't do those things. But that's, Bhagavad Gita chapter 3, Krishna is saying, no, you do those things, but you do them for me. So, the short of it is, dedicating those things, it's two parts, dedicating those things to the satisfaction of Krishna, like you're going to create a universe created for Krishna. Or if you're going to do whatever you're going to do, do it for Krishna. That's the karma yoga part, do it for Krishna part. And then the second is join that with the regulations, the direct activities of bhakti, like chant your rounds and perform sadhana bhakti. So it's, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, work for me and always keep your mind fixed upon me. Two things. And there are things that help us keep our mind fixed upon Krishna so that we can think of Krishna while we're doing the things that we do that are material. Like have a family or whatever it is, you know, whatever it is. Build the universe, you know, get a job, something. Those, Bhaktisiddhanta goes so far as to say is those things are as purifying for the soul as the direct activities of bhakti. That's nice to know. But you gotta get it right. Of course you gotta get your sadhana right anyway, because otherwise other things happen besides directly purifying the soul. But if you get it right, which Rishabhdev wants his sons to get it right, and wants us to get it right, is one should not pursue those unnecessary endeavors for sense gratification. And then he, you know, very graphically describes what that life is like. And there's a certain centerpiece of enjoyment for the sense gratifier, and that's this last, in the last line, asadya maitunyam. The sex life. Out of the material attractions, it's the number one. Since, you know, and not only for human society, for all of society, it keeps things moving. It makes the world go round. So in different species of life, I mean, anyway, without exploring that nice topic, all species of life somehow have this impetus for reproducing themselves, their species. It's in other words, it's built into the system. And it's not a surprise that it may appear in the life of someone who's a practicing devotee. And whenever their ashram may be some desire like that. So how to handle that? And it should not be, so going back to the part that's above, it should not be unnecessarily pursued for sense gratification. Not understanding this principle, very awful things happen in this world. Very, very awful things happen. These gang rapes and, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, the pushing is without this training, so many awful things happen. Oh, so the solution is not stricter laws and hang the monkey so people will know that if you do this, you're going to get slammed. It's this. It's what Rishabhdev is doing. And it's what we should be doing. You know, and we should be examples of this. So that is a very strong message to the unrestricted, unregulated people that are godless and are running around trying to figure out how to control the uncontrollable. It happens. It happens. Education and training on, as Rishabhdev is doing with his sons, and as the Bhagavatam is doing for us, and as Srila Prabhupada, our founder Acharya, did for all of his followers, we should very carefully consider what's the message and apply it. I made it. End of class. Any comments or questions? We had a microphone.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
You're explaining how, as practicing devotees, we should have this deliberate contemplation. What is my swartha? What is my highest welfare?
Yes.
So I just have a question, something I've been dealing with now that I live here full time. There are so many activities to engage oneself in the temple, and they're all related, you know, as service to the deities and service to the devotees. And sometimes I find I'm giving examples of details to understand the principle. What is the principle? One is choosing how to engage himself, and he has to kind of make that choice, and he's given that liberty that, hey, you make that choice on what, you know, what is it that
okay.
you want to do.
So the context of your question is, under authority, you have some freedom. Okay, so, okay, that's, because the first is under the authority part, that's, when that's very clear, then some freedom. that's a nice area. So, I'll say a few things. It's not just one thing, a few things. One is, the big picture of my nature. Generally, newer devotees don't think about, okay, what's my nature? It's just, yahoo, let's go for something, because I have some freedom. But so, my advice is, think of the big picture of what's my nature. And another is the instructions of our founder, Acharya. And then another is, very important, is, of these options, which will help me, which will be easiest for me, most natural for me, to take this up in a mood of service. Very important, because the mood of enjoyment, where I have some freedom, the tendency is to go for the enjoyment part instead of the mood of service part. So what will help me? It doesn't have to be, that's the most difficult, unlikely, undesirable thing. Let me do that, because if I do that, then I'll do it in the mood of service. It doesn't have to be that kind of thing. But what will it help enrich the mood of service? Could be maybe something more towards the middle, rather than something that I just like, I really enjoy, or I really don't enjoy. It's the mood of service. The mood of service. If you can get on that track, zoom, zoom, zoom. Off you go with spiritual advancement. To the degree that that doesn't take place and it's something that I enjoy, then practically speaking, a mix is going to develop. Something that attracts me to Krishna because it's in relation to Krishna, and the mood of enjoyment to some degree. Maybe not less like an awful degree, but to some degree, I'm feeding that. So before you just move in that direction, because, you know, that will have its purifying experience also sometimes, like, you know, getting slammed or, you know, something, some calamity happening that you really didn't anticipate, but like Brajbihari calls the unintended consequences of decisions that are made. And then another very nice one, is to consider, as a saintly person is advised to consider, or the quality of a saintly person will consider, how will this benefit others? Besides what I like to do, how will this be of benefit to others? So you don't have to obsess over that. You do a scan of those things, and then you move. And then, you know, recalibrate, and okay, how did it work come out? And of course, then you can consult with the people that are guiding you and say, what do you think? Is this, and, you know, they'll tell you what they think. Yeah. Something else. Yes.
I'm looking for clarification. As you were sharing in class, I was thinking that for me personally, to be able to abstain from doing something that I may know is not right, or doing things that are right, the ability comes from when I am able to get in that relationship where I feel love. So I'm able to think about you know, the person in my life who is a spiritual authority, guide, mentor, spiritual master, whatever the relationship is, where I have understood from them that this is not right, or I just innately know that it may not be right. So when you were saying that we need to take this training or persons need to be trained, I feel like over these years, what has happened with me is that there has been this closeness of relationships that has happened, and because of that closeness, there is a level of accountability.
There is?
A level of accountability.
Okay, good. Glad to hear it.
So, because that is there, I feel like that is the control point. So what else should be there? I guess I'm trying to find out.
Before the level of accountability, I would say what drives the level of accountability is two things. The commitment to the person and a clear sense of svartha. Even if I don't, if that's lesser, because I may be a bozo and I don't understand what's my self-interest. But if I understand here is a genuine well-wisher and I'm moved to be guided by this genuine well-wisher, and they know my bozo tendencies, that's okay. They've accepted me, so I'm committed to that relationship. So that drives the accountability. And someone that doesn't have that relationship, you know, that's unfortunate. And so their life is mercurial. It's unsteady and keeps moving and, ooh. So your question was, aside from accountability, are there other factors? That was your question. Or doing things that I should be doing and refraining from things that that are not wholesome for me. Yes, that's the question.
I guess I'm trying to understand, you know, like training that I've been receiving, and as I'm thinking about it, to me, I feel like over the years what I have received is somehow the ability to open the heart, to be able to know that I have love in my life.
Okay. But so, what do you do? Your question then is, how do I further enhance opening my heart so that I know that I have love in my life? Is that the question?
No, I guess I'm asking if that is what the training is. Is that training to be able to...
Sure. I'm anticipating that tomorrow I'll get a letter in my email box from you saying, I didn't articulate my question so well. What I really meant was such and such. And then because right now I'm not having a really clear idea what your question is. Maybe it's because you're not really clear what your question is. But certainly, in order to have a sustained effort going forward in life and certainly in spiritual life, there has to be a sense of love. And love in a transcendental sense of love, not the other kind. And that's life. So I can move in that dynamic. And is that essential? Yes, that's essential. Is that an essential part of the teaching? Yes, it's an essential part of the teaching. And so those things, from my side, those things that I can do that thoughtfully, not whimsically, impulsively, unsustainably open, but in, you know, a thoughtful, Krishna-conscious, devotional way, open my heart further, then I can receive more. And not only, you know, more quantitative, but qualitative. It's something like reading Prabhupada's books. We can read Prabhupada's books where we're getting something, and then as you recognize, wow, then I'm really getting something, then there's more openness and more, so you can get the fullness of what's there in Prabhupada's book progressively. The person or persons guiding our lives can give more depending upon our openness, but we can't just like pretend or like doesn't stay open. It has to be organic or, you know, very natural, a natural dynamic of a loving exchange. And to the degree that that's there, we'll have the capacity to receive more and be protected and be happy. That's Krishna's system. It's a loving system of love, loving relationships. Does that address the question? Okay. We got some hands up here. I saw Ashraya's hand first, and then Dityendraprana, then Jai Jagannath. Ashraya.
Excuse me. A nice example of the progression of someone under guidance, this came up in a previous class, was the Prachetas, the sons of King Prachinabarhi.
The sons of
King Prachinabarhi.
Okay.
The Prachetas.
The devotees, do me a favor, all of you. My hearing is like so bad.
Yes.
And especially the devotees have a tendency, being respectful, knowing that my hearing is bad, when they finish a sentence, it finishes like this real fast and I can't catch all the words. So especially at the end of the sentence, go a little slower, please. Thank you.
Okay.
The sons of King Prachinabarhi is a nice example. Okay.
Of persons progressing under guidance, progressively, different guidance.
Good.
They receive.
Good, got it.
And I wanted to ask, what was their most essential quality that allowed them to naturally move in that progression?
And what Lord Shiva said, obedience. Now, obedience, not in, you know, the dumb way, but obedience in the transcendental way. That's the answer. Their father wasn't so qualified. They were obedient. Look what happened. And look what happened to their father. So they were obedient in a transcendental way, not in a dumb way. And from that mercy from Lord Shiva, there came then the mercy of Lord Vishnu. And the Lord Vishnu benedicted them, and, you know, it's all kinds of nice things. So the one quality, the primary quality, was obedience. So here comes an order. I'm going along in life, and a transcendental order comes into my life. Now, how do I regard that? So another word than obedience might be submission. To, you know, the person, King Prachinabarhi in this case, but the person may not be perfect. Like Prabhupada would say, I may not be perfect, but I speak the words of a perfect person. My speaking is perfect. So we're looking at the system of where this is coming from. And if it's Guru Sadhu Shastra, fantastic. Submission. Or obedience. Obedience is I put it into action. Not just I say, oh, that's very nice. And it stops there. obedience is, I live by it. That's
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj.
Move the speaker. Point it a different direction.
In this verse, the person is called Vipaschit, one who sees truth or understands truth. And Rishabhdev is saying Yada Napaschiti, one who doesn't see it, although he is supposed to see the truth. So at what point does a person of knowledge not see truth? Is it when they forget Svartha? Is that the point when they
is this a cause-effect kind of question? Which comes first?
No, I'm asking what makes a knowledgeable person, one who's able, one who's come to the stage of, seeing truth or reality, not see it?
Well, I'm inclined to go to what Jiva Goswami says is the cause of coming into the material world. And that is turning attention away from Krishna. That's the cause. So a person can have knowledge, and you know they can display their knowledge. You look at all this knowledge. We've all met people that know lots of stuff. But so the point at which they become covered is their attention goes away from Krishna. So that it may be they have lots of knowledge and their attention never was with Krishna. They just got lots of knowledge. So that's not a person to follow. Or that's how a person can become bewildered like this. And then a demonstration of they're bewildered or their knowledge is covered, is stolen by illusion, is a life of sense gratification and, you know, all the rest of what's here. But the, what's behind it is turning attention from Krishna. Bahir Mukha Jeev. Bhakti Sandarbha. Jai Jagannath.
Maharaj, you concluded your class discussing about the importance of education.
Importance of?
Education.
Yeah.
On this principle. And as my recent emails to you have indicated, I've been concerned about how are we going to effectively educate, particularly persons who have yet to come to Krishna.
Yeah.
And especially in our attempts to do college preaching and so on, we find it very difficult even to say the word God without causing a disturbance, you know, in the few members who've come to the presentation or whoever. So I was wondering about how, also another point, you mentioned that at one of the GBC meetings, you guys got the freedom to talk about what do you see happening in 30 years in ISKCON.
Yeah, yeah.
And you mentioned about education also.
Yes.
So I was kind of wondering, how do you see us developing our educational, I'm not finding the right word, like power in order to effectively preach to especially those who have yet to come to Krishna?
Okay. My experience is different than the beginning part of your question. My experience is that today, in the current times, and say in the past 2 years, 3 years, there's a rise in the level of interest college students, young people, and beyond college, have in seeking genuine spirituality. So go a few steps back and say a plan should be designed knowing the audience. One of the first rules of speaking is know thy audience. So who's the audience? Where are they at? What are their needs, interests, and concerns? And what language might be the best language to address, along with, you know, everything that's in your reservoir of what the Vedic wisdom has given you, what to give them and what language to use to give them that match their needs, interests. It's like book distribution, same thing, or, you know, whatever. You need to know the person. You said, you even say the word God, and some people, they walk out of the room, or mentally walk out of the room. However, at least the present audience, as I see it, the word God is not the problem, it's phony stuff is the problem. And they want, in addition to what they want genuine, they want an experience. One of the reasons why Kirtan is so popular is because they experience something. So those are, at least from my perspective, for college outreach, that's how the two things that need to be there. Kirtan needs to be there, of course, prasad. Kirtan and prasadam need to be there. And connecting with something that they see is genuine. So I've tried to select some topics, and then you can develop those topics that help newcomers with something that they're interested in, like relationships. Everyone's interested in relationships. Or social activism. You know, making the world a better place. You know, and getting on the bandwagon to some extent of saying, you know, it's crummy. But then having something, in principle at least, that's genuine to replace its crummy. And, you know, whether they can resonate with that something, that's the alternative, it's genuine. It's going to stand challenges and time and, you know, whatever they can throw at it to knock it down, it's going to stand because it's genuine. And you stand by it. So, at least my thought is, made, you know, there's the big net, the medium net, and the small net. The big net has its place. I'm thinking specifically now of Stamba at Penn State University. There was a period of time when he was doing fantastic work. He had a big net, then he had a medium net, and he had a small net. He made a lot of devotees in that small net. And the big net was people felt, wow, the Christian people are good. I don't know what they're about, but there's, you know, they're good people. For college students, that's like kind of like not really high level thoughtfulness about, because I remember in Boston and Harinam, I met some people that came right over to the Harinam party and introduced themselves. We're for the Penn State program. And, you know, offered them some literature. No, no thanks. They just had good feelings about the Hare Krishna movement. Because you people are good people. You're doing good things. You're nice. Fantastic. It's not like, that's not the small net. That's the big net. So what are our objectives in college outreach? That's, you know, that's certainly one of them. Because the network goes around. Someone starts to go in towards the smaller net, and all of his friends say, oh, don't go there, because. So you want something of a big net. But you also want something that out of all those people that come, and then the sincere people, they're not going to mind if someone says, oh, watch out, because, you know, books in the airports or something. Right? Brainwashing, or, you know, whatever it is, they might say some bad. They're cults or something. Sincere people will see the genuine thing. We want the hearts of the sincere people. We want to be able to touch the hearts of the sincere. That's our main mission. Again, it's something like, this is from my perspective, because that's, you frame the question that way. And in my years of book distribution, it grew to the point where I understood I had two main missions, or maybe three. One, everybody gets the opportunity to take a book. Doesn't matter, don't discriminate who shouldn't, who will. Don't get on the mental platform. Everyone gets the opportunity to get a book. It's for everybody. Second, There's some people, out of all those people I'm going to meet today, some people are really searching. So I want to connect to those people. Like, you know, spend a little more time and find out in a short time what are things that are of interest to them and point to the resource that can help them fulfill that which is of interest to them. And then the third is some of those people are going to take some steps. Besides, there's a resource, they never do anything. Some people will take steps. So I'm Krishna's little emissary going out here in the field of the material energy and finding those souls. That's the mission. And then everybody gets a book, and some people can, you know, the in-between thing. So a strategy for college preaching, similarly, is like that. Something that's broad. And appealing. And you know, whatever you do, some people are going to say, I don't like it. But generally appealing, the experience of, it's like what Ram Roy is doing in Manhattan. There may be some people in New York that just go, oh my God, there they are again, and they put their hands on their ears and they leave. But there's a whole lot of people that really are moved by what he's doing. I mean, they're not becoming devotees, but they're really moved by what he's doing. And at least what I understood from Govinda is they stand there, they make a donation in the box, and they move on. They're not going to participate in sadhana bhakti, reading books. They just appreciate, here's a spiritual person doing a spiritual thing. It's a good vibration for the city of New York. I want to show my support for what you're doing. And some people come every day. And some people come, leave work early and come and sit down and, you know. So it's moving the hearts. And so it's many. Some people are, oh, you people are garbage. But many people are being, you know, it's fantastic. So a strategy that's like that with college outreach. That's enough, I think. Last question. An internet question. Can you read it into the microphone?
This is from Dr. Carlos. He said, but my life in Krishna should be enjoyable.
Should be enjoyable.
Enjoyable.
Yeah, I should be happy.
In the mundane and in a sublime way. Both enjoyment and life in Krishna should be prior, P-A-I-R-E-D, pair. Should be pair. Shouldn't they?
Could you repeat what he's saying?
Yeah.
What's his question? Go ahead. The answer to that is, whether it may or may not be enjoyable on the material level, it should be with devotion for Krishna. An example, right from Bhagavad Gita purport. Cooking in the kitchen in the summer. It's already hot. And you go in the kitchen and it's more hot. So hot. So my purpose of going in the kitchen in the summer is not, well, it should also be materially enjoyable. It should be enjoyable for Krishna. And hey, in the winter time, going in the kitchen is a nice place to be because it's hot. But it doesn't matter whether it's hot or, you know, whether it's enjoyable, not enjoyable on the material platform. And it's not nice when it's enjoyable and not nice when it's not enjoyable. It's nice when Krishna's enjoying, and that's my enjoyment. there are examples where it's mutually enjoyable for Krishna and for me, and that's, you know, but if that's the criterion for devotional service should match this standard that I just held up, then when it's not enjoyable, you know, see you later. Or I'm hesitating because it's supposed to be enjoyable and I'm not feeling enjoyment. I'm feeling it's hot in the summertime, for example, or whatever else goes on. I think any one of us that have been engaged in devotional service for some time know very well that a portion of what we do, we don't like to do. We don't do it because we like to do it. We do it because it's important and it's for our founder Acharya and it's upholding standards. Like, you know, let's say, you know, one example is discipline. It's not nice. That's not who wants to give discipline. But if you don't give discipline, then you have a, you know, it's damaging for the whole, so you have to do it, etc. So many examples. So many examples. Some stinky guy comes in off the street. No, it's not enjoyable. I don't want to deal with the guy. And he smells so bad. It's like everyone is, yikes, I'm getting out of here. Anyway, so dealing with such a person may not be pleasurable. But, you know, in a, not in a crude, hurtful way, but in, you know, that person, that situation needs to be dealt with. Etc., etc., etc. I'm going to end. Is that all right? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.